Okay.
I would like to call the meeting to order. This is the December 19th, 2019 regular meeting of the Public Employment Relations Commission. Pursuant to the Open Public Meetings Act, adequate notice has been provided by the dissemination of a written annual notice of meeting. A December 20th, 2018 copy of such notice was prominently posted in a public place at the offices of the Public Employment Relations Commission, emailed to the business offices of the Trenton Times and Courier Post, emailed to the Secretary of State for filing, and posted on the agency's website. Furthermore, a December 16th, 2019 copies of additional written notice of meeting were posted and emailed in a similar manner. To begin with, I would like to seek approval of the minutes of the November 26th, 2019 meetings.
Motion to move the minutes?
Someone second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? The minutes of the last meeting are approved. The chair's report for this meeting, I would like to begin by commending our council staff for the successful result in the Smith Federal District Court lawsuit. I'll leave the details of that court decision for the council report, but suffice to say that each of us were named defendants in the suit, and the matter was dismissed with respect to all of us. Thank you, council staff.
You haven't gotten our bill yet.
I'm sure you're worth every penny now.
I think you take it out of my pen.
In another development that will be addressed in the council report, there was a favorable decision from the appellate division in a matter involving sick leave verification and application. Once again, I'll leave the details of the report to the council report, but I do wish to emphasize that the court looked most favorably upon our dichotomy between recognizing the employer's right to require a sick note as verification and the application of that sick leave policy in denying sick pay, which is subject to arbitration. So I think it really made a difference in that case, although there are other elements of the case that are somewhat distracting. It made a difference in how the court looked at our treatment of the case to note that we made that differentiation between the managerial right to require verification, a sick note, as opposed to what it did when the sick note didn't come, and the fact that requiring the sick note was not subject to arbitration, but docking a day's, not allowing the use of a paid sick day was arbitrable. The Senate Judiciary Committee met Thursday, December 12th, and considered 22 nominations, none of which involved per commission nominees, so there's nothing new on that front, which makes me especially appreciative of all of you, all of your continued participation and professionalism. I am constantly getting positive feedback about the agency's performance levels. We are hardly perfect and need to improve certain aspects of what we do. Let's face it, there's always room for improvement. But we are serving the parties in the process as was designed. And, you know, we're near year end, and I think it's worthy of taking a special note that the entire staff, both professional and support, deserves a great deal of credit for its commitment and its achievements. And someone asked me recently what surprised me most, now a year and a half, more than a year and a half, into holding the position of chair about the agency. And as much as I expected that I would be working with an excellent staff, the highest levels of that continue to really stand out to me as something that I am pleasantly surprised by, although perhaps I shouldn't have been. I think we need to really continue to appreciate just how dedicated and effective they are. The next item is the council report.
Okay, well, as Joel has informed you, there are two cases involving the agency which are the focus of the report. The first one is the federal court decision in the Smith versus NJEA, the governor, boards of education, and yourselves, dismissing a lawsuit which was the plaintiffs in the lawsuit were both non-members of the education associations involved and persons who were up to Janice and shortly thereafter were voluntary members who, except in one case, then resigned their membership. And the claims for relief in the case of the non-members, they contended that, well, as Janice declared public sector agency SHOP unconstitutional, they should get refunds of agency SHOP dues paid prior to Janice. And the district court, reflecting, by the way, decisions from all over the country, they have every district court and court of appeals which has considered the issue thus far in the period after Janice has rejected similar claims, so this case is consistent, said, look, the agency SHOPs were created and administered based on the authorization contained in the mid-1970s U.S. Supreme Court decision in Abood, which said those arrangements were not unconstitutional. So the unions and the employers in good faith relied on that decision to implement and administer agency SHOP agreements. So therefore, prior to Janice, you're not entitled to any refund of monies paid during that period. As for the plaintiffs who were union members, the court, again, in concert with other courts around the country, said when you enter into an agreement with a union to pay dues, that is a contract. It rejected the plaintiff's claim that given that Janice declared such agreements are now invalid, we entered those contracts under duress. The court said those contracts are valid up until their expiration date, or in the case of New Jersey, where we have a statute which has set forth when you can terminate those agreements, your rights were not violated. And however, the education associations in this case were very liberal in allowing members who wanted to resign to do so almost immediately after they said notification. Part of the Workplace Democracy Enhancement Act, which was adopted just before Janice came out, had changed the dues deduction statute, which for education employees allowed people to deauthorize January 1st or July 1st of every year. In other units, you could, non-education units, you could do it only once a year by agreement. And they changed the statute. Now reads that if you want to get out of paying your union dues and resign from union membership, you give notice within, I think it's what, 10 days after your anniversary date. And no later than 30 days after that, your dues will stop. Well, the court said, well, if the unions had adhered to that narrower timetable, I think that that restriction on their rights to no longer pay dues might be unconstitutional. But since that wasn't done in that case, the courts essentially said, no harm, no foul. And that's part of the discussion of your being let out of the suit is on pages 23 to 24 of the opinion. And they said, well, PERC also is not requiring ruling that any withdrawal that doesn't conform to the timetable to be illegal. So, you know, there's no reason for PERC to be held liable for anything or to grant any of the plaintiff's claims against PERC. So those are the main points of that suit.
Don, is it also correct that there was one example of a plaintiff where the union acknowledged an error in not ceasing the deduction of dues?
Right.
And then remedied it with a retroactive refund with interest?
Right, because the normally you have to put something in writing to get out of paying, terminate your dues relationship with the union. This person, I think, might have sent an email or just communicated it orally, so the union did not stop it immediately, but it didn't continue for very long after that. And as Joel said, they gave that person back all the money. The final plaintiff who remained a member despite participating in the lawsuit made the argument that, hey, given Janice, in order to continue to collect dues from me, you should have obtained my affirmative consent to having dues continue to be deducted. And the court said, look, you had three opportunities during a given year to get out of paying dues. All you have to do is exercise your right to do so. And they rejected her argument that, you know, Muhammad had to come to the mountain instead of vice versa. So it's a significant holding in New Jersey. But as I said, it's reflective of similar decisions all around the country, some of which are cited in the decision, some of which the various lawyers for the defendants, including us, during the course of the litigation, would send in a letter saying to the court, hey, in Pennsylvania, they just had the same issue and decided it this way. And, yeah, as I said, all over the country. The other case of interest, as Joel said, was the Burlington City decision. And it was properly an unreported decision because, as Joel indicated, it reflected the current state of the law rather than set any new precedent on the dichotomy between management's right to insist on a doctor's note or verification of illness and the challenge to a disciplinary sanction that might have been implemented as a result of non-compliance with that requirement. And so the case is going to arbitration. The teacher in question asserts that both before and after the date question, which was the date of the Eagles' parade for beating New England in the Super Bowl, he had been sick with the flu, and his doctor didn't want him to come into the office because he didn't want the guy to infect other people, at least that's what he said. But as I said, it was a non-precedential decision, but nonetheless, it drew the attention of the news media from coast to coast. If you do a Google search and put in the right words, you'll get returns of over 50 links to newspaper and television stories on the case, which the media is calling the football flu case. So that's essentially where we are in Burlington.
And I think we've learned that a petition has been filed for certification.
That's correct. They're going to try and take the case to the Supreme Court. As I said, it doesn't set any new precedent. Probably the football flu label is what the city, the Board of Education may rely on in making its case to the Supreme Court to have it review the decision.
But removing the attention-grabbing headline, it's still a fundamental thing. This board has said management has an absolute right to verify, but that the employees cannot be treated differently, and those things that are permissible in however you enforce that have to be enforced equally across the board, and that they can't suddenly decide that a one-day absence requires another.
Well, I don't think we've gone so far as saying that they must do it the same way for everybody. What we have said is if the employee gets a sanction as a result of application of the policy, that sanction can be challenged in arbitration.
And that's what the court upheld.
Yes, exactly.
We think if there wasn't the aspect, the juicy aspect of this being the Super Bowl flu, this case would not have gotten as much attention as it had.
Somebody should write them and tell them something happens every 50 years.
If that.
At this point, I think it's necessary to have to ask for a motion to go into executive session to discuss some elements of litigation involving the commission. I would like to ask for a motion for executive session.
I'll make the motion.
A second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 None opposed? I'm going to ask the member of the public that's with us just to step out, and we'll come get you when we go out of the executive session. And you're here on the Atlantic County case?
Yes, sir.
We will move that case up to the top of the agenda.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
And make that the next item.
Oh, thank you, sir.